Welcome back to Graciously Confident from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. This is the series where we've been taking a look at the Church's response and our own responses to the assisted dying legislation that's been considered in the UK and Ireland. You'll have seen in the news how it's already been debated by some lawmakers. My name is Will Leach. I'm a journalist and broadcaster, and we hope this short series has been helping you understand. So now we're thinking about how we respond. Last time we heard some real stories, the lived experiences of people who are ill or who've lost a loved one. This time we're taking a look at the bigger picture. Joining me are the Reverend Linda Keyes, a volunteer who works also with Hospice NI, and Dr. Bex Stevenson, the Presbyterian Church in Ireland's Public Affairs Officer. Bex is the person who does all the research and nuts and bolts work of engaging with our society to explain what Christians believe is best for society. She's also put the hard work into making this podcast series happen. So, Linda, Bex, welcome both of you. And Bex, thank you for all that hard work, by the way.
Happy to do it.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, if you, the listener, have got as far as this fourth and final episode of this short series, we know you care and that you want to learn and that you want to follow our calling to make a difference for Christ in our society. Linda, you care. Tell us about the work you do with Hospice Care.
Well, I am a member of the Northern Ireland Hospice Support Group based in Ballymena. There are a number of support groups throughout the country. The role of the support groups in the community is primarily a fundraising role, but it's certainly not by any means about that exclusively. I think that one of the big benefits of having a support group based in the local community is that we can take this wonderful organisation and promote it to the people in the community so that people become more and more aware of what's available to them. It seems like an unfortunate thing in this country that we're so unaware of the things that are happening on our own doorsteps. And very often that's the case. And I think that's certainly the case in terms of Northern Ireland Hospice. But thankfully, we are promoting the awareness of this group. And it really has been paying off, where people are responding generously, both in terms of their giving financially, but in many, many more ways than that.
We heard in a previous episode that 60 to 70% of the funding for hospice care, certainly across the UK, comes from the fact that charities raise money or churches or groups raise money to provide it. Without the help of the state, they maybe provide the most of the rest. Is it just about fundraising, or do you have duties where you spend time meeting people who are there, who are being helped, who are spending time in the hospice?
It's by no means all about fundraising, although that is our primary role. People who work in the actual centres and hospice, obviously their contact is much more personal, much more regular with people who are ill. But our contact with people is with a lot of people who have had experiences of a terminal illness in their family, particularly children who have died in families. And they are the people who are stepping forward to volunteer. And it's quite amazing, just their commitment to something. But it's not surprising, because when we have a passion for something, that's really what drives us, isn't it? And those people very often are coming and putting work in, hours and hours of work, into raising funds, into contacting other people, into involving people to become part and parcel of the group. And they're investing huge amounts of time and energy in spite of their own grief and the trouble and just the traumatic circumstances that many of them have been through. And it absolutely blows my mind just how committed people are to helping others, particularly when they've been through such dark times.
Bex, I think this is something you understand, because you engage from the church's point of view with issues in society, but you keep meeting people whose real lives are entangled up in situations like those Linda's describing.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that is always really important for us to remember, that even behind all these legislative changes, behind all of the big policy decisions and the assembly debates, that there's real people and real lives, and their grief and their experiences are so important. And it's really important that we're aware of those and those are shared.
When you were working, Linda, and first said, I want to get involved with hospice care work, did you have a perception of what you were going to, or when you first walked in the door, of what this place would be like? And how did that measure up with what you then found?
Yeah, well, I think like many people, my perception of hospice was that it was somewhere where people went to die, that it was a place of grief and sadness. And I was absolutely astounded to find that the opposite was true, that this was a place where the focus was very much on life and where people were joyful, even in the face of such awful circumstances and illnesses and family circumstances that they could never have believed that they would find themselves in. And the care that was provided by these experienced and gifted staff and volunteers was extraordinary. And I don't think that it could be surpassed anywhere in this country, the care that people receive in hospice. It really is. The quality of the palliative care is exceptional, and the whole focus is on life rather than death. And the one thing that surprised me more than anything was the amount of joy that there is in the place. It's not a place of sadness at all. In fact, the opposite is true.
Does that warm your heart, Bex? Because you're trying to get people to understand this whole issue of end of life, why we may not be happy with the legislation that we're seeing across the UK and Ireland about end of life. And there's someone saying there are things to celebrate in the alternative way of looking at things.
I think that's incredible. I listened intently to the debates that have happened through the passage of the bill in Westminster through the Commons, and I think so often what was echoed and what became the loudest voice was those with the really negative experiences. And so I think it's really great that someone here who has worked in that environment is talking about joy, and that joy can coexist in that kind of environment.
So why is it important for ordinary Christians, people who sit in the pews on a Sunday, who think about their calling, to be involved in this debate? Because it seems like it's politicians and politics and legislation, and I don't know anything about that and I can't make a difference, so why should I? Why do you want to encourage people to make a difference?
Something that somebody said to me years ago was about don't underestimate your sphere of influence, don't underestimate your influence. And I think that's something, because we all have a sphere of influence where we are. We all have a role to play. And so I'm really passionate about encouraging Christians to have those conversations. Be brave, step out, speak. And that's part of why we ran this podcast series, because we want to equip you as best as possible to have these conversations. And that's where the name comes from, graciously confident. We want you to be gracious about it, but be confident. Step away from that idea that this is an argument you need to win, because it isn't. I just want you to go and to challenge the person who is saying what they're saying and tell them a better story, give them a better alternative, one that doesn't end in despair but leads to hope. And you don't have to change their mind. Policy can't do that. We can't do that with an argument, but God can. So pray. Just be brave, commit it to prayer, commit it to the Lord. You know, listen to the podcasts and go out and have those conversations. I find people generally respond well. And they're interested and they're engaged. And you mightn't change their mind, but you certainly will have challenged their thinking.
Give us some specifics to pray for. What would you like people to pray for on this issue, on the legislation, on the debates, on the need for palliative care that's the same across everywhere, on the funding for it, on how people are looked after in this part of their life that is basically the final chapter?
You've covered a lot of the bases there. I think, first and foremost, pray for people. Pray for the people who are facing a terminal diagnosis. And as we've heard, you know, in the last few episodes, that doesn't mean imminent death, but that is still a big adjustment. So pray for them, pray for their families. Pray for doctors who are doing a fabulous work working in palliative care. They're really caring for people and they love these people so well and they're really passionate about their jobs. And then pray for politicians, which is not always the easiest thing to do. But pray for your politicians, pray for wisdom, pray that they will make good decisions, and pray that instead of maybe pushing forward on an agenda of assisted dying, that they will look to the real need that exists within the palliative care kind of system and strategies. You've said it, and I know Max has said it, but they do survive on bake sales. And Linda's doing a fabulous work here, but that's not how it should be. This is intensive care. It should be funded the way intensive care is.
Is it frustrating, Linda, that there isn't always enough money to do what you would love to do because you have to go and find it, and that's difficult?
I think that it is frustrating in one sense, yes, because there's always more that can be done and there are always more and more people who need these services, and specialised services, very specialised services. But at the same time, it's a real joy to do what we do in the community, to be a part of the fact that, you know, when you go out to stand on the side of the road and the rain's pouring down on you with a little tin shaking it at people, and somebody puts a pound in or somebody puts £20 in, that it's going to make a huge difference in somebody's life. £37, I think, is the cost for 1 hour of care in the hospice in Northern Ireland at the moment. £37 is not a lot of money for most people, in spite of the present economic circumstances that we all find ourselves in. Lunch for two, forgo it one day, and instead of putting a pound in that jar, put £40 in. I had a friend once, a good Christian friend, who was a very successful businessman, and he always believed in giving and giving generously, and did and practiced it. And he always said to me, "Linda, you can never outgive the giver." Because that's who our God is. He is an amazing giver in so many ways and calls us to do exactly the same. And there's such joy for us in giving and doing it quietly, and doing it when you've got that opportunity in your local shop or in your hairdresser's to put something in the box, to volunteer yourself as a volunteer, to become part of your local group, to find that when you actually get involved physically and practically in raising these funds, that you find that the statistic of £37 disappears from your mind sight, because all of a sudden it becomes Mary or James, or Mary and James who've just lost their baby, or the elderly couple who've just had their relationship shattered after 50 years of living together, or the young father who has had to face the fact that he's not going home to his three young children next week. Those are the things that are important, and not the finances. Although we primarily raise finances, it's not our focus, which is a strange dichotomy, because we are more focused on what we can do for people. And those figures, those statistics disappear, and people become the focus of what we do.
I meet a lot of people in the jobs that I've done over the years, and a lot of them want a better society and they want things to change and they want things to be done. It's quite a big shift for them to say, and I'm going to be part of it, and I'm going to actually do some of the doing myself. What gets people over that first hurdle to say, no, I'm going to do more than just sit and say something should be done, I'm going to do some of the doing?
Unfortunately, I think it's people who have been through a difficult circumstance themselves, because they realise the importance of the facilities that Hospice NI provides in their families and in the life of the person who has been unwell. I may be a wee bit personal here and tell you that that's what drove me. My youngest sister, over 20 years ago, was blessed with a new baby girl, brand new baby girl, born in the Royal Victoria Hospital on the 23rd of December. But when we got the phone call, we weren't celebrating because the news was not good. And the doctors were saying she wouldn't make it until Christmas Day. So the first phone call was to her minister to go to the hospital to baptise her. She was born and diagnosed with a very severe form of hydrocephalus, and we knew from the start it was going to be very life-limiting. Now, Charlotte, as she was called, wee Charlie, as she was affectionately known in the family, thankfully defied the doctors on that day and did many times over the next few years. But those 6+ years that we had with her was such a blessing, such a blessing. People would look at her in her little wheelchair. She had a very little eyesight. She could hear quite well. She was not mobile at all. And they would look at her and they would feel sorry for her. But she brought so much joy to so many people, to family, to friends, to strangers, complete strangers just loved her. In fact, she was so popular that she was the number one customer in Morelli's ice cream shop in Port Stewart. She had free ice cream and she never had to queue for her ice cream. To this day, I have never seen a child who enjoyed an ice cream so much. And she just loved it, and people loved her. And as a parent, as a grandparent, I can't think of anything worse than having to make a phone call to the hospice to book a place for my child to be cared for there. And I said that to my sister one time. And she said, Linda, I can't think of anything better. Because the care that she received was incredible. And not just in the centre, but at home. And not just for her, but for the entire family. And this is the wonder of the palliative care that's provided here in this country. It's not just the sick person who's cared for. A whole family is cared for. And not just until their passing, but after their death as well. They are cared for in multidisciplinary teams with many other professionals involved, and the care is outstanding. So, you know, it's just, how can you not be involved in something like that once you know about it? And this is the problem. I think once you know about it, and once you know about it, you find out that if you have a passion for it, which you can't help having, that what you do, no matter how much energy you invest in it, it all seems like very little. But the one thing I've learned is that very little can produce an awful lot for so many people.
There's someone, Bex, who's clearly had a family experience, has learned a lot. And Linda, you paint a wonderful picture of what it is to be involved and to see the difference it can make. But at assembly buildings, you beaver away thinking about how do we get the church's voice heard in this public debate. There was a report to the General Assembly this year, and we're talking June 2025, and they listed some issues which were really important that you've had to grapple with. Can you remember them?
One of the things we did was back in 2023, we established a task group which had a number of members who, some of them you've heard from during this podcast, who have expertise on this issue. And it was really with the intention of being proactive about this issue, because so often, unfortunately, Christians have been kind of reacting to these things. So we sensed that this was going to be an issue that we were going to have to tackle, probably not as quickly as we did have to. And so one of the things that we as a denomination decided to pass at the General Assembly was something called a resolution. That resolution, it's quite large, I'm not going to read it all, but there's a few points I'd love to just pull out. And so one of the things that we decided as a denomination to do was to commend the work carried out by hospices, palliative care inpatient units, hospital palliative care teams, and community palliative care teams. And it's really just about affirming the work that they're doing and getting behind them and just acknowledging, because there's going to be people in the pews who work in those fields of work, and it's about saying, in the face of this legislation, in the face of this change, it's not going to undermine the great work that you're doing. Another thing that we decided to do as a denomination was to encourage ministers to set aside a Sunday annually to consider the importance of holistic end-of-life care, affirming the innate value and dignity of every human life from conception to death, and to pray for those who resource and deliver essential palliative care services in our communities. And I think that is really just about us getting behind those people in the pews, those people who have had family members that have received palliative care, and just reminding them that they're seen and valued, and that we as a denomination value them.
There were a few other principles that were discussed at Assembly this year, and I picked a couple out because I was brave enough as a layman to delve into the big blue book that some people will know about. But they pointed out that it was impossible to legislate well for assisted dying or euthanasia. They pointed out the negative impact of provision of good end-of-life care if the bills were passed, that it could actually damage the good that's being done, that there were so-called legal safeguards, but there was real concern that they won't actually protect the vulnerable. This is difficult stuff you're grappling with, but you're hearing from ministers, you're hearing from families, you're hearing from experts, and you're trying to get the voice heard.
Yeah, I think someone once said to me that a lot of the kind of work that I do is a bit like grasping the nettle. And I think that's a really good descriptor of it. But we have to tackle these issues. We have to discuss them. And I think we have to bring them into the light so that we can discuss them openly and transparently. And if we as a Christian church aren't talking about them, who will? So you're quite correct. And I think one of the points that actually really resonated with me there when you were talking was about there's no way to legislate well for this, and there isn't. I'm not going to hash into what's already been discussed in previous podcasts, but we've seen this in other jurisdictions and other places where regulatory creep, which is where that legislation just keeps becoming more and more liberal.
More extreme, yeah.
Yeah, it is a thing. And, you know, you can try and deny it, but it's evidenced elsewhere.
So I'm going to move on to something that I think applies to both of you, but I'll start with you, Bex. How do we make a difference? Do we write to our MLAs? Do we write to our MPs? If we bump into them, do we say, you know, one thing I'm concerned about, if they come to our doorstep on an election, and some of them still do, do we say those kinds of things?
Do you know, I think what's great about lobbying and getting involved is it's so much easier than people think. I was thinking about this, and MLAs, MPs, TDs are elected officials, and they're elected by you. And participation doesn't end at the ballot box. Like, you get to lobby them. So go on the internet and just Google your MP, your MLA, your TD, and you'll be able to get access to their email address or their constituency office. And so send them an email. And if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I'd love to send them an email, but I don't know what to say.
What do I write?
Yes. Visit the PCI website, because we have a Lines to Take document on there. Or go to Christian Action Research and Education or to the Evangelical Alliance and check out their websites. They have resources up there that will help you know what to say. Or email me. And the other thing you can do is contact their constituency office and book an appointment. I know, for example, Carla Lockhart, who's an MP, has a surgery that she runs once a week in Northern Ireland, where she invites people to book appointments and come see her. Book an appointment with your local constituency office. I mean, I once chased an MLA through Peatlands Park. I wouldn't recommend that you do that, but they were very good sport about it. And they still sometimes have meetings with me when I request them. So don't be afraid to contact your MLAs. They're people too. They're elected by you to represent your views. They can't do that if you don't tell them what your views are. And they don't have to agree with you, but they will listen.
One thing about this, I think it's really important that the conversation is positive and you say, here's the way I would like it to be done, rather than a list of I'm against this, I'm against that, I don't like this, I don't like that, surely.
I think that's a really good point. Don't be competitive. You're not there to win an argument. You're there to challenge their thinking, to tell them what you think, to tell them a better story. And that's what it is. And if you want to go and speak to your MLA or your local politician, talk to them about palliative care. Talk to them about how grossly underfunded it is. It's really disappointing. So talk to them about that. It's all about how you frame the argument. So if you're not sure what to say, talk about palliative care.
We'll give you the details of that resource hub on the Presbyterian Church in Ireland website a little later on, just to remind you where you can go and find some of the help that Bex was talking about. Do you find yourself doing this, Linda? You get into conversation with people and they say, what are you up to these days? And you say, I serve in this, I do that. Why do you get involved in that? And that's your opening, isn't it?
Yes, it is, very much so. And I think that whilst there is a tremendous place for us all to respond to our politicians, the fact that we can respond practically for the people on the ground, the people that we meet on our day-to-day lives, that's what they see. I think we need both approaches, absolutely. We need both approaches. We need to be able to influence people and help people to change legislation and to bring about changes that we would love to see. But we also need people on the ground who are practically there doing the things and seeing it working out. That's a great base for you to go and approach any public a politician or a member of parliament, that you can say, well, here's what's happening in the town where I live, and this is what I can do. And I think it's a wonderful thing for us, a wonderful opportunity for us as followers of Christ to introduce God into the whole situation. And many people won't want to hear that, let's be honest about it. But we, you know, it's our strongest point. It really is. You know, it's where we should be going as a starter. We don't really want to bombard people with it, particularly if they're not believers, and we want to do it gently, but we really don't want to miss this opportunity to tell people who God is. And you know, when I think about this, I think the one word that we can use over and over again is compassion. That's who our God is. He's a God of compassion. If we look right through scripture, time and time again, God did things because he had compassion on people, even things that he really didn't want to do at times, and things that he felt that people really didn't deserve. He did it because he's a God of compassion. And when we think about that, I think when we go into the New Testament particularly and listen to the Apostle Paul in Corinthians, when he said, our God is the Father of compassion. He wouldn't want a father who's full of compassion, and we have it. And this is something then which we can reflect onto people in our community right across the board, the people that we are dealing with on a day-to-day basis, the people, our neighbours, our friends, the people who know nothing about hospice, people who know nothing about death and sadness in their own families yet, but it will happen to all of us. This is something which none of us are spared. At any stage in our lives, we all have to face it. And the Apostle Paul said in the book of Colossians, when he talked about compassion, he said then, he said that, clothe yourselves with compassion. He tells us as followers of Christ to do what God has done for us. Clothe ourselves with compassion and pass that on to other people. And whether you're standing on a rainy corner in the street in Ballymena for an hour someday, or you're sitting in a luxury hotel chatting to a politician, does it really matter which one you're doing? If you're clothing yourself with compassion of Christ and people are seeing that he can make a difference. Because really, you know, as believers of Christ, that's what we believe. We believe that he's the one who can make the difference. He can change the minds of our politicians. He can give us all the finances we need. He can provide all the practical support. He can heal the sick. He can do all the things that we need. And we need to learn more and more to come to him and to be brave enough. And sometimes, you know, it does take bravery to step up and to say this to people, particularly people who are going to scoff and to say, not so sure about that. But to say it anyway and to be confident that that's who our God is, that he is a God of compassion and he calls us to be clothed in that same compassion for other people. Isn't that why we do what we do, any of us? And what a blessing that is. And what an encouragement that is to all of us, particularly when we hear about lack of finances and lack of response and legislation being introduced that we abhor. Just love to see wiped out. But our God of compassion is way beyond all this and has the power to change things. And let's not forget, who does he use to do that but you and I and ordinary people on the ground?
Luckily we've recorded that, Bex, because it's a quite remarkable call to action from Linda there. And that's something you do have to tackle, that sense of who am I to say this? I can't make a difference. We can't make a difference. Nothing ever changes here. And it's very easy to fall. We're very good at it in the UK and Ireland. Fall into that we're beaten before we even start mentality. And I suppose part of it might be decades of really difficult times on this island. But it's not as simple as that. How do you, in the policy sense, encourage people to action?
I think you're right. That attitude exists. And I really want to challenge it. Because it goes, I'm repeating myself, so forgive me, but don't underestimate your sphere of influence. I used to work in the House of Lords, and I worked with a Lord who used to say, I'm going to continue to hold government's feet to the fire. And in a policy sense, I can guarantee that the Council of Public Affairs is going to keep doing that. We're going to continue to lobby. We've also called for a palliative care strategy in Northern Ireland that currently doesn't exist. We will continue to lobby government. We will continue to push forward. We will continue to hold their feet to the fire. But it's not just us. It does require your action. It does require your help. And you have a louder voice than you think. And I think prayer is the first place to start. Let's win it in the air before we win it on the ground. Let's get praying. So pray about this issue. Write in a post-it note, put it in your fridge. Every time you go to get milk, pray about assisted dying, pray about the lack of palliative care resource. And then I think Linda's right. It's bravery. I challenge you to be brave. Step out of your comfort zone. We've given you the tools here. Go back and listen to the podcast again if you feel like you need more help. Go to the PCI website, look at the hub, and there's so much on there just to inform you, just to give you a bit more information. And the more you know, the more you're going to feel confident to talk about it. But the first step and the really scary step is being willing to put yourself in that uncomfortable position to have that conversation. And I promise you, God does amazing things in uncomfortable situations.
You may regret answering this, but if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
The best way to get in touch with me is info@presbyterianireland.org, or you are welcome to call Assembly Buildings and ask to speak to the Public Affairs Officer. Ask for Dr. Beck Stevenson.
Thanks for everything you're doing at the Council for Public Affairs. Thank you, Linda, for everything you're doing in Ballymena and everywhere else and the people you're supporting and encouraging. Keep that kind of call to action you gave us coming, because what an inspirational listen it was. And thank you for joining us on this last episode in this little series about assisted dying and euthanasia. there will be other programmes. Thank you for listening and caring enough to find out more. Keep it up. Encourage your friends and your fellowship to be informed, to pray and act accordingly. Look out for the next episode of this podcast, Graciously Confident, as we talk about other subjects and issues relevant to us and the places where we live. Until the next time, bye-bye.